you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for tuning in to the Twilight Histories. What you're about to hear is part 4 of May His Ka Endure Forever by Kevin Valvanese. Some podcast for a hobby. Others make it their livelihood. Kevin is one of those driven, talented types that's trying to podcast for a living, and I have the greatest respect for that. If you're looking for podcasting services, you've got to check him out. You can find him at baroquemedia.com. We're going to start today's show in just a moment, but right now, I want to recommend a podcast to you. I found this newish history podcast. It's only been around for a year, and it's really good. History Impossible is a show about things that sound impossible, but are true. Things like the repelling of Soviet Russia by tiny Finland, or the strange, werewolf-like fanaticism of the Nazi soldiers at the end of World War II. The host is Alexander Radar von Sternberg, and to give you an idea of his style, he's been moving more towards long-form, multi-hour shows. The shows are deep and immersive. They remind me of Hardcore History or Martyr Maid. It's called History Impossible. And now for today's show, May His Ka Endure Forever, Part 4 by Kevin Valvanese.
A man ponders a mystery, and in discovering the truth at the heart of it, he finds himself more confused than when he began. Perhaps this is how the pioneers of quantum physics felt. They glimpsed a world of particles and waves which led to even more mind-bending questions about the fundamental nature of our reality. Even now, in an age where time travel has become a service rather than an impossibility, you find yourself unable to comprehend the arrival of a fellow time traveler in the land of the pharaohs. Really, the presence of this man should be the most mundane of all things you've seen in your long career. His presence is unlikely in an infinity of whens and wheres, but not impossible, and certainly not extraordinary. But there he stands, high-tech armor gleaming, the cleverly disguised time machine still rumbling as it slows its engines and fills the air with a curious current. Memnon kneels, touching his head to the ground, taking this mortal interloper for a true god of Egypt. But you pay the man no such respect. You step forward and make a show of spitting at the man who presumes himself lord of these lands. Stand up, Memnon. This fool's not worth the dust on your forehead.
Do not speak like this in the presence of a god.
Memnon doubles down, repeating a sickening bow and muttering prayers under his breath. He's no god. He's a traveler, a man of my own land. He's dressed a little better, sure, but he's every bit the crook I am. The pharaoh smirks. He descends the miniature pyramid upon which his time machine stands and comes to a stop at the altar. The high priest scurries over, taking his place at the pharaoh's right hand. But truly, I am a god to these men. Look at what I've done with a little imagination and even less ambition. Then, look at you. We're both men of a world where the impossible is a fiction. But you stand here before me as what? A beggar?
He is a thief, most serene majesty.
The high priest points a long, spindly finger directly at you. A thief? That's what you use this technology for. To steal. What poverty of imagination. The pharaoh comes around the altar and approaches you, unbothered by the sword you level at his face. Stop right there. You stop and tell me how to work the machine behind you. You do that, or I'll spill your blood all over the floor. But the pharaoh keeps coming, and once he's within striking distance, you swing the blade in a wide arc. The pharaoh moves with deadly speed, ducking under the blade and delivering a devastating strike to your solar plexus. You stagger, giving the pharaoh the opening he needs to knock the sword from your hand with a precision chop. The blade hits the ground, and before you can dive for it, the pharaoh pulls you right into his raised knee. Spittle erupts from your mouth as you crumple onto your back. How on earth did you make it all the way down here? The pharaoh steps over and grabs you, trying to haul you up. You thrust your head up and back, smashing your skull against the pharaoh's chin. The man falls back, rolls, and recovers into a kneeling position. He rubs his bruised jaw. Impressed, you dive and seize your sword, recovering quickly and leveling the blade at the pharaoh. Not bad. Hardly elegant, but not bad. Finding yourself exactly where you were before, you decide on a fresh course of action. You feign throwing your blade, and then flee as the pharaoh flinches, making a mad dash for the temple doors. Memnon, dumbstruck by the whole situation, finally snaps out of it and joins you as you flee for dear life. You leap out of the temple, soaring over the steps, landing on solid ground with a thud. Spying the boat, you push yourself to run as fast as you've ever had to, ignoring the searing pain erupting in your lungs and kidneys. You hurl yourself into the boat. Memnon lands right next to you. Acting fast, you cut the rope mooring the boat to the pier and shove off, propelling the boat out and into the open water of the lake. The pharaoh strolls out of the temple and stops at the edge of the water, resting his hands on his hips like a disappointed parent. With a flourish, he signals the men across the lake, all of them looking your way due to the general commotion. Soldiers scramble, and other men rush to the enormous screws which control the artificial waterfalls, which are still dammed up high in the chamber's walls. Memnon, row, row! You both fumble with the paddles, but you manage to get a firm grip on them. You row, struggling to find a rhythm as you kick up water in a desperate attempt to reach one of the tunnels into which the artificial lake empties. Men thrust themselves against the spokes set into the screws, turning them. You hear the rumble and moaning of stone as the discs in the upper apertures begin to roll away, threatening to unleash the deluge they now contain. Your time is short. You'll either be crushed under the surge or surrounded on the open water. Faster, Memnon! Memnon cries out, frustrated but determined. You increase your pace, speeding closer and closer to the nearest tunnel. And you need to go faster. For now, there are boats filled with soldiers closing in on your position from all sides. Up above, water trickles out from between the receding stone discs. Water splashes down into your boat, filling it with an inch of the stuff, threatening to sink you if the incoming torrent doesn't crush you first. There's an explosion as the stones above finally and fully part, loosing a surge of water. The torrent crashes down, just missing you and Memnon as you glide into the tunnel. Now, the rushing water creates a wall between you and your pursuers. It's an escape, a lucky one at that. But your reprieve is brief. The impact of the water crashing down from above causes a surge of waves, propelling your boat down into the dim expanse beyond. You and Memnon row, trying to maintain control. But the struggle is fierce, as you reach the edge where the water level drops off, sending you downward at a modest angle. And though the decline is only a few degrees, the raging waters are enough to carry you down at a perilous velocity. The surging river carries you into the darkness of the tunnel, interrupted only by the occasional light of flames held aloft by a statue of Pharaoh. Simply trying to keep the boat upright is hard enough, let alone trying to orient yourself. You catch a glance of walls, a flat ceiling, and infrequent niches where the flame-bearing statues of the Pharaoh reside. The tunnel continues its steady decline for several minutes, and you hardly notice that you're leveling out as you continue your struggle to stay above water. At least now, the fight is less furious, and in a matter of minutes, moving at a manageable clip. You're able to better survey your surroundings, and you can see that the tunnel is widening out. This section of the tunnel has higher ceilings, too. It's not unlike those massive corridors you encountered in your descent through the necropolis, with numerous statues of the Pharaoh in their niches, sparing you the envelopment by complete darkness with their sacred flames. Now what? Just how big is this place? You row, wondering if you're even making any meaningful progress. Glancing ahead, you see nothing but the faint glimmer of flames. Should have rushed the machine. What are you babbling on about? Memnon is indignant. You watch him struggling to hold on to his paddle with bloodied hands. Looking at your own, you see faint streaks of red. Did you have any idea what they were doing down here?
I was responsible for masonry in the temple. At best, I thought we were going to tap the Nile for water. I did not know that Pharaoh's architects had created all of this. Such a thing is impossible.
That word doesn't mean anything anymore.
And the Pharaoh. Truly, he is a god. He has survived for thousands of years. And you struck him. I am amazed you did not drop dead in that instant.
I didn't drop dead because he's flesh and blood. Memnon pulls his paddles up into the boat, refusing to row anymore. You pull yours up as well, expecting an outburst. Instead, Memnon leans forward and buries his face in his bloody hands.
You have cost me my place in paradise. Because of you, my car will be doomed to wander these corridors forever. Forgotten.
Oh, come on. You don't really believe that. Not after everything you've seen. Memnon doesn't respond. He just sobs, indifferent to your materialism. You press a clenched fist against your forehead, and you seriously consider grabbing Memnon and telling him about the wonders of time travel technology, in defiance of that cardinal rule which every time traveler must commit to heart. As a veteran traveler, you know the rules. You know that the cardinal sin of time travel is to tell the denizens of your destination about the technology that brought you there. Even as a thief, you knew better than to divulge such a secret, for the future progression of that timeline, altered forever by such an utterance, might be noticed by even the casual observer. And even now, with scientists continuing to probe the possibilities that a mastery of time and space provides, there is much uncertainty about the consequences of it all. But then, scientists had risked it all before, and continue to do so. And the obvious meddling of that time-traveling pharaoh did nothing to raise sufficient suspicion back at the Twilight Histories, or the competitor. And then, another thought crosses your mind. Where could that imposter pharaoh have come from? Surely, he wasn't an agent of the Twilight Histories, or of their competitor. Nobody uses gear like he was wearing. You yourself were transported here in little more than Egyptian cotton robes. But this fellow had the temporal equivalent of a diving suit. Either he was overly cautious, or maybe the technology was becoming more prolific. Perhaps someone else with a sophisticated knowledge of physics and sufficiently deep pockets has cracked that most coveted of secrets. Maybe it's just him, an eccentric billionaire with delusions of grandeur. Or might there be some other group willing to tolerate his antics here in this timeline in exchange for information, for proof that their product is ready? Memnon, I need to tell you something. It's not going to make sense, but you need to hear it. Memnon looks up, but not back at you. At least he's listening, you figure. So, you try to get the really difficult part out first. Obviously, I'm not from around here. And since we're probably not getting out of here alive, I figure it won't hurt to tell you the truth about where I'm from. See, the thing is, I... Be silent. Memnon raises a hand, and the tone of his voice dissuades you from pressing the issue. Not a moment later, Memnon is gesturing at somewhere in the distance. Somewhere ahead and slightly to your left. You peer over him, and your eyes go wide as they fix themselves upon a platform. There's a small ramp ahead, rising up from the water and onto this platform. At the edge of the platform, a singular stone sentinel keeps silent watch over the water, peering out past its long crocodile snout to the opposite wall. Praise Sobek! Memnon gestures in adoration for a moment before seizing the paddles and beginning to row again. You simply shrug your shoulders, content for the moment to leave Memnon in his blissful ignorance. You grab your paddles and help Memnon steer the boat up and onto the ramp. You both leap out and rush up the platform, collapsing moments later from exhaustion around the human ankles of the crocodile deity. Waking from a deep slumber, you find yourself laying down on the wet stone of the platform, staring up at ever-silent Sobek. You marvel at the craftsmanship of the statue, wondering why such attention was lavished on a work that had hardly been seen by the pharaoh's subterranean servants. Never mind the unaware thousands who dwell under Ra's watchful gaze.
Get up! I think we have a way out of here.
You hear Memnon's words, and right away you spring to your feet. Your muscles tighten in protest, but the thought of escape helps you silence them.
There is a stairway here.
You step over to where Memnon is standing, some distance into a large niche. You find the first few steps of a spiral staircase between two small statues of an upright draconic cobra. You're distracted, if only for an instant, by the remarkably un-Egyptian style of the serpents. These beasts resemble something more akin to the lands of Sumer and Akkad than anything else. But you have other concerns, and so you pass between the reptiles and peer up and around the bend. The staircase winds around, and as you begin your ascent, you find that the curve is subtle and the incline modest. The steps themselves are wide enough to accommodate three men at either side. You wonder what need there would be for such a staircase. How far up do you think it goes?
How should I know? We must pray that it delivers us to the surface before Pharaoh and his men catch up.
You don't need any further encouragement. You continue your ascent, taking a brisk pace, bracing your tired body against the inner wall. Memnon follows behind you, his chest heaving as he gulps down air. As with everything in this underworld, the staircase go on for what feels like an eternity. You and Memnon have to stop several times, catch your breath, and listen for the sound of Pharaoh's henchmen. But luckily, after hours of climbing, and not a trace of your pursuers, you arrive at the top of the staircase. A large, plain stone door greets you. There's no ornamentation or any fuss. It's just a large block of masonry. And next to this large block of masonry is a lever set into a niche. You press your ear against the door, and while not quite satisfied that the coast on the other side is clear, you decide that you're willing to risk it all. You grab the lever and pull it. A satisfying click precedes the groaning of the door, and in no time at all, the stone swings away. Once again, you're blinded by light, but this time, the light is warm and comforting. The light pours over you and wraps you in its gentle embrace. As you squint and open your eyes, you find the blessed source of that happy light. In the distance, you see the sun breaking over the ridge of a sand dune. The sight fills your body with vigor as your lungs fill with fresh air. You drop to your knees and collapse into a mess of tears and sweat.
Praise Ra! We are delivered!
Memnon grabs you and pulls you up to your feet.
But not if we stay here. Come!
Memnon leads you out from the staircase and into a structure that you hadn't noticed yet. Obviously, the staircase didn't just lead into the empty wastes of the desert. Instead, it leads you out and into a small temple. You emerge and find yourself behind a ceremonial altar, and beyond it, the immaculately chiseled central space. There are large columns, each carved to represent the pharaoh with his crook and flail in hand. All over the walls, there are masterfully painted scenes of the pharaoh in his role as high priest, standing before the many gods of Egypt as their equal, offering gifts and salutations. As you look around, you notice that none of the cauldrons are lit, and that the temple is illuminated only by the light of the rising sun. You signal to Memnon to walk around the right side perimeter of the temple while you take the left. You advance quickly, and in no time at all, you confirm that the coast is clear. Joining up with Memnon at the entrance to the temple, you see that the temple is an island in a sea of sand. It's the only sign of civilization for what might be miles of desert. But maybe Memnon sees something you don't, because for the first time since you've met him, he's smiling. Yeah, I'd be smiling too. It's a better place to die, I suppose.
We are not going to die. Not today.
Oh? How's that?
This is a shrine to the great ancestor. There are many like this, all across the desert and the countryside. The gods look favorably upon those who take up the journey and bring offerings to the first king of the two lands.
What's your point?
The shrine is far, but not that far from Thebes. The high priests would say, a day's walk and a moment's offering bring years of favor by the gods.
A day's walk? We haven't eaten in what? A day? Maybe two? And there's no water.
We escaped, didn't we? Perhaps then, we have the favor of the gods. And if so, then they will provide.
Memnon gestures back to the altar in the temple, Looking over, you see a humble sacrifice made by some recent pilgrim. A basket of dates and a small vessel of liquid rest at the foot of the altar. You walk over and inspect the offering. Lifting the vessel to your lips, you taste it. It's coffee. Day-old coffee.
You see, they provide.
There's not enough for both of us. Not for one day.
Then we'd best hurry. Because all the temples face Thebes, it ensures an easy return for the worshippers. If we leave now, we may arrive before sunset.
We've no other recourse. You scoop everything up and step out of the temple. You set your sandaled feet down on the hot sand and gaze out over the dunes to marvel at the sun, still rising high in the sky. Glancing back, you spy the entrance to the stairwell and the darkness within. Turning back to face the sun, you go on your way with little more than scraps and pure hope to sustain you. Sand. Sand. And more sand. It's just been sand and the occasional uncovered stone from the buried walkway you're now treading up. The sun is now at its apex in the sky, turning Ra the Savior into a merciless tyrant. And all the while, you trudge on, trusting that Memnon knows which way he's going. Memnon carries the vessel of coffee, covering it with a strip of cloth from his skirt. You carry the last two dates. If you had to guess, there's maybe one sip left of the coffee. One last jolt of energy to propel you across the sand and over to the oasis that is Thebes. Not a word passes between the two of you for hours as you march ever onward through the vast expanse of desert. Necessity dictates your silence, for every word is a precious breath lost, and every time you open your mouth, the hot desert air bakes your tongue. As much as you want to pester Memnon and ask him how far, there's just no point. As midday gives way to the afternoon, and Ra continues his journey westward across the sky, you consume the last date, having given Memnon the other. Your stomach still groans, as does Memnon's. It's the only dialogue that's passed between the two of you in hours. Off in the distance, you can just about make out a dark smear on the horizon. It's a thin, slightly irregular line, broken up and sizzling as the hot air radiates upward at the horizon. Is it Thebes? Or just a mirage? You don't really care anymore. It's at least something to aim for. Up ahead, Memnon stops, nearly crumpling over. He steadies himself and takes the vessel of coffee up in his hands. Without realizing it, you shoot forward and grab the vessel. Memnon looks at you, shocked. How much is left? Memnon pulls back the cloth to reveal little more than a sip of coffee at the bottom of the vessel, sloshing over a mound of coffee grounds. You drink that, and you've killed me.
We are not far from Thebes now. I am sure of it. Be patient, and the gods will see us through until the end.
Damn your gods. We got here because we pushed hard. Nobody's gonna swoop down and carry us over to Thebes. You tug at the vessel, but with surprising strength, Memnon keeps his grip. Your eyes meet, and in an instant, you're on each other, wrestling to try and pry the vessel away from the other. In the struggle, the vessel falls, but does not spill its contents. You and Memnon grapple with each other, trying to pull the other out of reach of the vessel. You thrash about, kicking up sand, scraping your skin on the exposed stone of the walkway. Finally, you manage to mount Memnon, and you strike him hard with your fist, dispelling what little fight he has left in him. He spits up blood, peppering your face with it. You roll off of him and drag yourself over to the vessel. As you scoop the vessel up, you turn back and look at Memnon laying there, barely moving. His chest hardly rises with each labored breath. He looks at you without malice or misunderstanding. He knows why you did it. And had he won the fight, you wouldn't expect him to behave any differently. You want to say something to him, but you're barely able to keep breathing after that last brutal exertion. All you can do now is look into his unblinking eyes and make peace with yourself. This is how you've survived countless worlds across the expanse of space and time. This is how you'll get back to your own world, ready to strike out again in search of your fortune. This is necessary. But you can't do it. Not this time. Looking down at Memnon, you see a brother. You see a man who is willing to risk his life in your service to make something more of his lot. Soldiers, henchmen, guards, whoever stood in your way, you dispatched without question. But this man, you can't trample over. Whatever treasure you might still salvage at the end of this journey isn't worth the life of this poor man. You kneel down next to Memnon, cradling his head. He does nothing to fight you. Just looks up at you with those unblinking eyes. You raise the vessel to his lips and pour what little coffee is left down his throat. And with that, you toss the vessel aside and lay down next to Memnon, unable to manage any more than that.
Why?
The solitary word escapes from between Memnon's parched lips. You try to muster the strength to answer, but you've got nothing left. Your vision blurs, and darkness creeps in from the edges. Unconsciousness washes over you. And with that, the world goes black.
What you just heard was May His Ka Endure Forever, Part 4, by Kevin Valbenesi. Right now, I'm working on Part 5 of a long-form show called Blue Dragons that's just for patrons. I'm getting pretty excited about this series. It's really different from anything I've ever written for you before. And I'll tell you, the way things are setting up, Part 6 is going to be mind-bending. I actually couldn't sleep the other night because I was planning it out. And you'll see. Just come over to Patreon and join the adventure. You can do that by either visiting the website twilighthistories.com and clicking through, or you can go directly to patreon.com/twilighthistories. There you'll find over 40 shows available when you sign up. Before we go, a huge thank you to all the new patrons: Pierce Tyson, Tanner Bush, John Higgins, Bradley Schwartz, Jonathan Reimer, and Mohammed Chukair. Henry V talked about his happy few, and to me, that's you guys. If you were an army, you'd be my Welsh longbowman, taking out knights from across the field. I salute you. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Till next time, take care.